Welcome into the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PackersNews.com Packers Podcast Post-Draft Edition. I am Jim Ozarski, along with my co-host Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, PackersNews.com. We made it.
Yeah, we did. It was a long 3 days, as it always is. But, you know, it wasn't one of those marathons where, you know, like Ted Thompson, some of his drafts where they'd have 12 guys and you go like four picks in the seventh round, you know, of guys you've never heard of. So, you know, all in all, it wasn't that bad.
No, the Packers leave the draft with eight players following the day one deal of 2 fourth-rounders and a first to move up and select safety Darnell Savage Jr. So, you know, five on offense, three on defense, or the other way around, I guess.
Yeah.
Forgive me for the for the turnaround there. But, yeah, I mean, I guess Dexter Williams, Jay Sternberger, kind of the two skill guys, you know, given to Matt LaFleur on offense and you know, another lineman and out of interior lineman, right? Elton Jenkins out of Mississippi State. Excuse me. So just some thoughts here, I guess, offensively, because we'll go with that.
Yeah, let's go offense first.
Yeah.
Oh, you want some thoughts from me?
Yeah,
oh,
thoughts
okay.
from you.
I have to generate some thoughts. Go give me another cup of coffee.
Exactly.
No, I actually I wasn't freaking out the way other people were about wide receivers and running backs and that they needed all these guys. You know, if your quarterback's good and your offensive line is good, then I would worry about I wouldn't worry so much about the wide receivers. And the point I kept trying to make in the blog was Gutekunst addressed wide receivers last year in a really wide receiver heavy draft. So this year, in a really good defensive draft, he focused on defense. And I think that's what you have to do. You have to just keep getting good players and don't worry about what position they're in. You know, I mean, if they have to get a veteran receiver, they'll go out and get one. But I don't have a problem with what they did.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, Tom. They addressed the tight end need, if you will, people screaming for a tight end. Sternberger fits that role. Third rounder, relatively high pick. Kid had 1 year of film, basically, at Texas A&M, but it was a good year of film. And Dexter Williams, big play kind of running back, that the 4.57-ish 40 speed, but a guy who, you know, averaged over 9 yards a carry. 2 years ago, 6 yards a carry for his career. Big play running back. That's a big play tight end. We'll see how much I actually see the field, but it fit a theme, I guess, for Gutekunst, right? In terms of finding guys who make big plays, or at least they did in college.
Well, you know, Dexter Williams could start this year. I mean, that's how running backs are in the NFL. You don't have to be a first rounder to start. You can find yourself in that position all of a sudden. And so he's a wild card, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's a really good chance that he'll play during the year. Sternberger is a little different case because it's really hard to play tight end in the NFL. All of a sudden, you're blocking defensive ends and you're trying to get down the field on guys who are like Devin Bush all the time. Or, you know, I mean, the caliber of player is just so much better. And, you know, you look at a guy like Robert Tonyan, and really talented guy, but it's taken him a while to learn the offense and learn how to block. So I wouldn't expect a ton from Sternberger, but I don't think they need a ton from him.
The, you know, a thing we talked about in the pre-draft run-up was tackle. And, you know, the Elton Jenkins pick is interesting, Tom, because, you know, he was a top-rated center for Mel Kiper Jr. He was the top interior lineman for Pro Football Focus, 26 straight starts at center. I mean, you got to go back to his sophomore year to see him play guard. And the Packers say, well, we draft him as a guard with Corey Linsley signed through 2020. They tried to say he can play some tackle, but you finally got Brian Gutekunst to admit, well, if we need to get out of a game, he could shift over in a pinch. Was Jenkins the pick because right before him in that third round, Tom, four tackles went. And I think there were three or four in the first round. There really weren't any tackles left at that point.
Yeah, well, they would have needed to move up to...
And they didn't have that ammunition after the Darnell Savage
trade. No, they
trade.
Really didn't. They really didn't. They were pretty much stuck. And that's part of the game, you know? And so they went for the safety when maybe sticking around at 30, they could have got a tackle.
Yeah, and so I guess the reason I bring that up is, look, he's a second-round pick. And now you're throwing him into that mix of Billy Turner, mm-hmm. Cole Madison.
Yeah.
And let's, you know, I'm not just going to toss away Lucas Patrick or Justin McCray. I mean, these guys, I mean, they're going to be there, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least, so how does this shake out? Because right now, Jason Spriggs is Billy Turner the swing backup if either tackle get hurt? And now you have, because you have depth on the interior line, is that how this played out after three draft days?
Well, as of right now, Jason Spriggs is their backup tackle at both positions.
Okay, so you wouldn't move Turner off?
All those guys are going to play all those positions.
Okay.
You know, that's going to sort itself out in training camp. You know, they'll play Turner at right tackle. They'll play Cole Madison at right tackle. Well, I don't know if they'll do that. But they'll play Jenkins at right tackle.
Okay.
They'll play Spriggs at right tackle. They'll play them all at guard. I mean, that's just the way they've always done it here. Now, James Campen isn't here anymore. But I'm sure that they're going to find out how to get the best five guys on the field.
Okay.
That's what they're going to do.
I guess so. I struggle with that. I don't see how you can build a cohesive offensive line if you have guys playing two, three different positions or trying, I mean, just.
Well, it's really benefited them in the past
okay.
because anytime there's an injury, they've been able to plug in a guy, and that guy's been able to handle the assignment. Now, he's not always been a great player, but he's been trained at that position. A perfect example is Justin McCray. His rookie year, I mean, he played left tackle, right guard, and left guard. I mean,
okay.
he played all of those.
Okay.
And if he hadn't practiced at tackle during the season, they would have been royally screwed.
Right.
And so it may dilute a little bit from the start of the season, but, you know, by the third week in camp, you should know who your offensive line is, and then you start working them
right.
together. So I wouldn't worry about that as much.
Adam Stenovich, first-year offensive line coach, right? I mean, there's some work there then.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, they have a good problem at guard, you know. They have a good problem
yeah.
in that they have a bunch of guards that, hey, you know, any one of them could start, and it's going to create some great competition.
Yeah.
I just don't know what they got at right tackle, and I definitely don't know what they have at backup left tackle.
Yeah.
Now, nobody in the league has a good backup left tackle.
No, yeah.
You know, that's.
I mean, it's like the fifth starter in baseball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You just,
you just don't have one.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard enough for teams to find two
yeah.
to start, let alone a third that they like.
Yeah, maybe, who knows, maybe the new O-line coach will have some kind of epiphany with Spriggs, and all of a sudden he'll be able to play left tackle. I mean, he hasn't showed it, but, you know, he's a big, lengthy guy, and he should be able to play left tackle. That's what he was drafted for.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll
yeah.
see how that goes. But, yeah, I could see that as a potential
right.
problem spot.
You know, I asked Brian Gutekunst going into this the final day, where knowing he had four picks,
mm-hmm.
If the lack of I guess was that, maybe it was before the Sternberger selection. I can't recall. These days run together. But if it sort of proved that what he had and Matt LaFleur had said in February, which was, we like this receiver room, we like the running backs, and to me, actions always speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. If they would have went out and signed receivers or drafted running backs mm-hmm. high, let's put it that way, you know, Dexter Williams may yet be, you know, be a great story. But it now that free agency is over, the draft is over, they admitted Sternberger has work to do. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not coming in and just going to supplant Jimmy Graham, mm-hmm. right? They really put their money where their mouth was in just that this offense, as constructed in 2018, which is essentially the same in 2019, is good enough. It just needed new coaching. It just needed a new scheme because, mm-hmm. I mean...
You could say that.
That in reality, I mean, Dexter Williams is a sixth-round pick. Mm-hmm. Jake Sternberger is a third-round pick who they already said is... needs time to develop.
Yes.
So you're rolling with the group you had in 2018 that frankly wasn't very good and necessitated a change. I don't know. I find it interesting that that's, you know, as of today, that's sort of where they're at.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I agree with you completely. They have not done much. Gutekunst, to me, is very comfortable with where they're at on offense. And I do think there is a false security there based on Rodgers, you know, is going to come back and be the guy he was. So in their minds, Rodgers comes back, is the guy he was. Everything's going to be fine
yeah.
now. But I don't – that to me, that's not a guarantee. I don't think that's a
He's
guarantee
gonna be 36
in any way,
coming
shape,
off a
or mind.
Broken
or,
leg.
Yeah. And I don't know if this offense is going to work for him. I don't know if he and LaFleur are going to get along. A lot of question marks there. So I do understand people worrying about the offense. I just think that you have to give those three guys from last year a chance because I liked what I saw. I thought Equanimeous St. Brown late in the year when it finally clicked in looked like he could be a really good receiver. Valdez-Scantling kind of wore down
yeah.
as the year went on. But, you know, I think they got some potential there. So, but I totally get what you're saying, and I think you're right. I think they just stood pat.
Yeah. And so let's flip it, because obviously, you know, we spoke after the first round about the drafting of Rashawn Gary, the trade up and the drafting of Savage Jr. You know, they add Kingsley Kiki,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, defensive end slash tackle. Looks like they're going to add him, have some weight added to him, interior D lineman, and then Kadar Holman, a corner out of Toledo, and then a seventh rounder in Ty Summers out of TCU. You know, we'll see where Summers kind of fits in and Holman in that back end. Kiki seems like, you know, to me, Tom, was interesting. Seven sacks a year ago in the SEC. They moved him around. But he's gotten to the quarterback in his college career in the SEC,
mm-hmm.
inside, outside. He seems interesting to me to a degree, because his weight has fluctuated, but he's produced, you know, seems like a D tackle that could rotate in. I
think he can do it.
Yeah.
I think he can be. He's lost 20 pounds and played defensive end. He can rush inside. I think he's probably a lot like a Dean Lowry, except a better athlete.
That's what I was going to ask, because, you know, Lowry, Lancaster, Fidel Brown, I think to me, when given the opportunity, proved they were solid rotational
mm-hmm.
NFL linemen.
Mm-hmm.
but that was kind of it. Like, they were there, they held down the fort, but you didn't really see sacks or consistent, right?
No, there was a decent amount of pressure. Okay. I mean, you know, there were some pressures that I thought they got. They didn't get enough, of course.
I mean, you can't compare. I mean, it's hard to compare to a Kenny Clark. I mean, that's your, you know, you're falling off, I guess, from you know, arguably what should have been a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
Inside. I don't know. Kiki was interesting to me because it seemed like they feel he could be a more of a impact rusher.
Yeah, I really want to see him. I want to see what he looks like. You know, based on what Charles Walls, the scout, said, you know, he's built wide. He's got long arms. Yeah. You know, and let me say, if you look at, you know, Rashawn Gary, who's just a stud, athletically big, long arms, you know, wide body. I mean, he can play just about anywhere. Then you bring in Kiki, and he's a big guy, you know. And all of a sudden, I just keep thinking like they are slowly siphoning out the Mike Daniels guys, and that. You know, Mike Daniels is not going to be the type of guy they want to play. That he's right now a specialty player. Yeah. He's an inside rusher on third down. I don't think he's a run player anymore. And I think that's part of what we're seeing here with the addition of Gary. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just going to slip it in there. I slipped it a couple times in the blog, but I wouldn't be surprised if they traded Daniels.
Interesting.
You know, he's in the last year of his contract. Someone will take him for his inside rushing. But it just seems to me like everything that I'm seeing is Gutekunst changing the form of what his defensive line looks like.
And especially what we know of Za'Darius Smith, the way Baltimore
Smith,
really
I
liked
didn't even
to
bring him up.
The way Baltimore really thought he was effective was being an inside rusher, essentially, kind of stunting around and Gary, I think Gutekunst said, can do that as well. And so it's interesting. It's an interesting group of large, fast humans who aren't the Clay Matthews, Nick Perry sort of mold of, you know, the big old bend around the edge with the big wingspan. I think Gary, they think, can do that. But, you know, Petten's front seven here is really different and unique, I think, in that way. So, yeah, that's interesting, Tom, in terms of Mike Daniels. I could see that, too, especially if they feel Montrevious Adams is the light bulb has gone on there.
There's another guy, big body, right, you know, long. It just goes on and on.
And it's a numbers game, too. Eventually,
they got
at some
many
point,
guys,
there's going to be, you know.
I mean, I would rather have that problem if I'm
a
coach at defensive line. You know, give me too many guys.
Right.
You know, that I would carry more defensive linemen than I would any other position because they're so critical. We'll keep an eye on that. I think I could see them moving Daniels, but we'll see. It's a different looking defense.
The pressure within, can you have more pressure within a pressure cooker? Because I guess Matt LaFleur, we talked about this. Matt LaFleur, you know, this team is built to win. The quarterback wants to win. But I think within that, though, Tom, the sheer money they spent with three starters on defense, the draft capital they spent, not just this year, but with Jair Alexander and Josh Jackson a year ago, I mean, it's kind of set up for this defense to be able to win in week one. If they need to win 14-10, because Aaron Rodgers and this group needs
9-0
3 weeks. I mean, it's kind of set up for we need to be writing in camp how much, you know, Alexander's intercepted Aaron Rodgers or how ahead they are of the offense. And, you know, you can almost, I mean, it kind of has to happen this way, right?
It does. And we're going to have to be careful to overestimate the defense because I think they'll dominate the offense. You know, the defense dominated the offense in training camp because they knew every part of that offense for the past 13 years, you know? And so they knew what Rodgers was calling, what he was running. Now it's sort of flipped. And we have to, like I said, we'll have to be careful not to make too much out of that defense because they're going to struggle offensively. Yeah. They're going to be – there's going to be guys scratching their heads going, what was I supposed to do there, you know? I just think that's the way it is on your first year. So your point about them winning some really ugly games, that I think that's what Gutekunst purposely has done, is given – taken all the pressure off of LaFleur. You know, now he's basically saying if you score 17 points, we'll win. You know, that's kind of what he's saying with this – if this defense comes through the way you would think.
Yeah, it's interesting in that way. Is now we're able to kind of pull back because that's the thing. In free agency, it's like, well, let's wait for the second, third wave, see what veterans are cut, whatever, and that's – I'll wait for the draft. See, I mean, the broader view of it is, okay, Billy Turner and Elgton Jenkins are essentially your two highest profile additions on offense in terms of guys who – you know, Brian Bulaga tweaks a knee. I mean, that could be the right side of your offensive line. And so you're going to run the ball and you're going to play good defense. And you got a $140 million quarterback kind of, you know, having to come handing it off. I mean, but, you know, so these are things, of course, we'll get into many podcasts down the line. But I think after the draft, Tom, that was all I could think of was – that's where the front office pushed the chips, was to Mike Pettine and to, as you said, to maybe ease a little bit of the growing pains for Matt LaFleur and the quarterback.
Yeah. Build special teams and defense. Be basically, I think they're trying to be the Seattle Seahawks, what Seattle was for all those years when their defense was good. They had a really good quarterback, but They stuck to running the ball and they stuck to playing good defense. And everything was surrounded around that. And with a 36-year-old quarterback, I don't think that's a bad idea.
Right. Especially one who gets hit and has been has had bones broken each of, you know, the last 2 years. I mean, he was able to play through it last year, but
and my God, the guy, if he has a running game behind him, you know, he's such a good movement passer that all the bootlegs and stuff they'll be able to do with him, you know, he should really want that.
Right.
You know, it just means he won't take as many attempts.
Yeah. And, well, you know, if you make 8 yards per attempt, you still get your stats.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, it's funny on our Facebook Lives that our colleague Olivia Reiner hosted throughout the draft, and thank you all if you joined in visually. Over the last 3 days, you know, people wanted to, what are grades and grades? And we talk about this. We don't grade drafts after they're done.
Yeah, I don't.
However, they did make 8 picks. They traded 2 of them away to get Darnell Savage Jr. I mean, on the surface, Tom, did it kind of go the way you thought it might? After Gary, because I do think number 12 was always going to be some sort of pass rusher, defensive guy.
I agree.
I mean, 3 days later, does the Savage Jr. trade still sort of surprise you? Does waiting for Sternberger surprise? I mean, because they could have, because unlike Gary, where it's like, who else could they have gotten? I do think you can look after some of these picks and just wonder, they maybe could have taken Irv Smith Jr. They passed on him for Jenkins. You know what I mean? Like, so there were, did it go kind of the way you think, or did you think, I'm surprised
I didn't see them taking Savage because I didn't know enough about him and I should have done more homework on him. I didn't realize he was as highly regarded. And I do, well, at least from various reports, there were teams that were interested in taking him, including the Colts and the Ravens. Or Raiders, I think it was. So he had to move up. He had to make that decision. Does he move up or does he stay and take a tackle? You know, which he would have had. He could have gotten Caleb McGarry. Let me just look at it.
Cody
real quick.
Ford. I mean, there was four Jawan tackles.
Jawan Taylor
yep.
was there. Greg Little was there. Cody Ford was there. Dalton Reisner was there. Yep. All those guys were there. But he made the decision that this guy's going to be a difference maker.
Yeah.
This is what makes GMs.
Right,
either,
exactly.
You know, you make these kind of decisions and, you know, your record is graded as the years go by. I will say I've never seen a 4.37 safety.
Yeah.
And have you ever covered a guy that is...
Not that fast.
No. Nick Collins was fast, but he wasn't 4.37.
No,
fast.
And coming from where I came from in the AFC North, I mean, that was... You know, the corners were fast. You know, the safeties were still big. I mean, you know, Sean Williams, George Iloka in Cincinnati, and then obviously Packers fans know Iloka from last year in Minnesota. But, I mean, Polamalu wasn't that guy. Weddle wasn't that guy. Tony Jefferson, I mean, there are your more traditional mm-hmm. safeties, and if they covered well, it was because they just were positioned that way and were smart guys. I mean, you know, Savage Jr., the way they, you know, it'll be really interesting to see him move and to see what he can do athletically and how they actually use him, knowing, hey, he might be able to turn and run.
Here's a thing that I can see them doing, and Patton especially, because this is what he likes to do, playing three safeties and, you know, using Jones or Amos as a, you know, nickel yeah. linebacker. Maybe it's Josh Jones. And then Savage is like a wild card. He can go out and cover a receiver, and then you drop Amos, you know, deep, or you blitz him off the corner. I mean, he's going to be a great slot blitzer, especially if he's lining up man-to-man against the slot receiver.
Yeah.
So I think it leaves them – I think Savage will not be a traditional tight safety, and I think we'll probably see them play with a lot of three safety yeah. sets.
The one, along that line, is that maybe why inside linebacker wasn't addressed until the very end of the draft with Ty Summers out of TCU? Really good linebackers tend to come out of that program. You know, he's had shoulder issues. I know Packers fans don't want to hear that. He's had surgery on each one coming out. But, you know, Oren Burks almost fits in that receiver mold from last year. I mean, he got hurt, his shoulder, in the preseason.
Yeah.
He's playing catch-up the whole way. You know, assuming he progresses and does what he does, I mean, it's almost like, I mean, clearly they felt okay with what they had, and maybe Josh Jones and Josh Jackson and Savage Jr. and Amos are the sort of new wave of playing in the box, so to speak. I mean, I'm not discounting Preston Smith's role here either, but obviously they feel good about what they already had, because Summers is a seventh rounder. You can't assume he's going to make the team or even, you know, out of camp.
No, and you know, so I was really thought there was a good chance they would take Devin Bush if he were there. And, you know, what I'm going to say is contradicts that, in that the inside linebacker position isn't as important as it once was.
Right.
But good defenses, some of the good defenses have had really good inside linebackers. You know, Darius Leonard, I think he transformed the Colts defense. Roquan Smith certainly helped. C.J. Mosley helped Baltimore's defense. The kid from Florida and Detroit's defense. I think it's Florida. Anyway, I'm burned out, so I can't think of his name right now. Jared Davis, I think it is. You know, has really started to turn that defense around. That said, I'll still take all these defensive linemen over a inside linebacker
right.
any day of the week. So if they would have gotten Devin Bush, I think that would have been a great. Not getting him and getting Rashawn Gary and the safety, I think are fine.
Yeah.
I think that's just fine. I don't see it being a huge problem.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, of course, they made their run through the undrafted list and bringing in a bunch of guys for rookie tryouts. You know, rookie camp is coming up this week, voluntary workouts. So the next OTA is May 20th, and that's when they really kick off with, you know, OTAs. There's the mandatory mini camp kind of running into mid-June. So they're really going to get after it on the field over the next month and a half.
And don't forget, though, you know, the free agency part is not over because now the teams have drafted their guys. You're going to see some cuts and some trades. You know, the other thing is they signed some intriguing undrafted guys, too. You know, a couple of quarterbacks. Or they're bringing one in who's a tryout and another who's from Arizona State. They signed some receivers, another tight end. I just think that they got, you know, the draft doesn't end today.
Right.
And the free agency doesn't
end
today. So there's still going to be opportunities to improve their offense and defense. We'll see what Gutekunst does, you know?
Right. No, for sure. It'll be it will be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, you know, some of this stuff will flesh out a little bit once we see them more on the field. For instance, seeing Billy Turner at right guard.
Yeah.
You know, in the very first mini camp. I mean,
we saw a little bit of him this past week.
Right.
But, you know, there's nothing. So the OTAs will tell a little bit more, but really it's all going to matter with camp. I think I think LaFleur said that too. He's like, you know what, you can't tell anything till you get into training camp.
Yeah.
So we'll know then.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for joining us this week, not just for our Packers podcast here, but as well as all of our content at jsonline.com, packersnews.com, all the Facebook videos, the Periscopes, the live blog, tremendous engagement. Obviously, we are here for you, so thank you for being there for us. So we will get back with you soon on a podcast. Looking forward to it. For Tom, I am Jim. Thank you again. We'll speak to you soon.
See you later.